Hello, and welcome to Fave This, a podcast about video games and internet culture and fandom and shit. I am Gita Jackson, and I am joined this week by...
Alex Better.
It's Alex Better, Kotaku's social media manager?
Yeah, I am a manager, and I work on several Gizmodo Media properties, but mostly Kotaku.
We love you so much.
Yeah. Thank you, Gita. I love how you introduced, you were like, this is a podcast, like we're trying to trick someone.
Yeah.
Like
surprise.
We're three children, toddlers in a giant overcoat being like, a podcast.
I am actually three toddlers in overcoat, so don't blow up my spot right now. But I wanted to have you on because you started this incredible new show for Kotaku called TLDR.
Yes, which the first episode came out this week. It's just a silly thing that will be on Kotaku's social channels weekly. It's just the kind of, I guess, the point of the show is that I'm a dumb baby, and I know nothing about anything, and the Kotaku staff teaches me what they're really passionate about, or, like, stuff that, we talk about it before, it's stuff I do not know about. I do not know what this is or that is.
And you don't know what anything is.
No, I don't know what anything is. I mean, it was kind of born from the fact that every so often, especially the Kotaku staffers, I feel, are so... like knowledgeable and passionate about like hyper specific beautiful things.
Very true.
And so often I come into work and I'm like, I don't know. Maybe it sounds a little bit silly, but like
always talk about stuff as if everyone knows about it. And then you are new. Like when I first started working here, people would say things like, can you open sheet 16, which is our scheduling sheet? We used to have sheet 16 and then it died and became sheet 17. And that's how we schedule up hosts for the day. And like on my first day, I was like, what the fuck's that? Like, what is that? Can you please tell me?
but I mean, what I mean is like, it might sound too earnest, but it's like sometimes I leave work and I'm just like, oh, I learned something. Very like specific today. And like, wouldn't it be fun if someone taught me something on camera and explained something that they like really cared about?
Yeah. So you started off with Tim Rogers.
Oh, yeah, right off the bat, Tim Rogers.
I love him so much.
Tim. Tim is, I described him today because he came by, like, the main, like, pod, like, where we all sit. He popped in for, like, a hello. And he left, and my immediate thought was, like, he is the Kramer of Gizmodo Media Group.
Yep.
He, like, just kind of pops in and has, like, something really funny and, like, crazy to say and then pops out, disappears. Yeah. And, he taught me about the Monty Hall problem, which is a statistics problem. It was math. He taught me math. That was the first episode I learned about math. And, it's, like, a very classic statistics, like, problem that, I don't know, if you, I did not take, I did take statistics in high school. I did. Because here's the thing. When you got to senior year, you had a choice between, like, calculus or, not calculus. What's the?
Pre-calc?
I forget. You had a choice between that and statistics. And I was kind of like, I'm doing whatever, like, AP history and art history. Yeah. I was that person.
Yeah.
And so I was like, I don't want to do like a crazy math class, so I'll take statistics. I swear to God, I slept through all the statistics.
Yeah, I took pre-calc online, which meant that I had another browser open with Google in it when I took tests, which I'm not ashamed to admit, I did not go into STEM. So
yes.
I can do most basic math anyway, so I can count shit up in the grocery line. Like, that's, like, what kind of math I need. I can solve for X.
Can do, like, the get-through-life math.
Of course. I don't need to know pre-calculus. I just don't. Not in my line of work. that episode was fantastic.
Yeah.
But Tim, what I like especially is we talked a lot about sort of the genesis of the show before we actually made it. And part of it came from loving like cable, like access, mm-hmm. like talk show aesthetics.
Yes.
And it is so on point in your show.
Yes. Some of the criticism I've seen this week is like people are like, you're trying to do Between Two Ferns. And I was like, nah, exactly. Like we put a plant in because that's the thing. Like mm-hmm. we put a plant between us. Someone was like, you should have called it Across One Palm. Because there's like a palm tree between us. But I'm like, that wasn't like exactly it. Like that was definitely like something we brought up in reference because that's like just public access aesthetic.
Yeah.
You just put fake plants or like yeah. just real plants in between you guys, like around to fill yeah. out a set.
They're cheap and you don't have to get a lot of yes. them to like, yeah.
The real kind of inspiration for the show was Paul, who is there one of the amazing video producers at yeah. Kotaku, who's an evil genius.
He's incredible.
He found a clip from a show in LA called The Carol Vitale Show. If you YouTube it, The Carol Vitale Show. It's amazing. It's like this woman who there's only like one episode on YouTube of like her public access show in LA. The opening things, it's all like glitzy, like kind of a soft filters, like it looks like everything's sparkling, and it's just this woman like getting out of a limo and like walking up to like this like kind of jazzy song and an announcer being like, this is the Carol Vitale show.
Oh my god.
And she sits down and then she's like, hey, how are you guys doing? it's wild and so funny. And that's like really what we were like, okay, this is like the main inspiration for how
the show
will look
and feel. I really wish that you had like just gotten an Uber to like stand in front of the office building
so you
could get out of it. Really?
Do you think I did try that?
You tried? What?
Well,
it would
have been complicated to like shoot and film. You know, we're on like tight schedules here.
Come on. That would have been so good. Maybe for season two of TLDR. Mm-hmm. We can get you.
Maybe a guest. I'm excited. You are going to be a guest.
I am going to be a guest in the show.
You're going to talk about a fandom conspiracy.
Yeah.
Paul is also a guest who talks about the street, not Street Fighter, Streets of Rage 2 soundtrack, which is like an iconic soundtrack that I never heard before, which I've actually listened to since because it's on my winter playlist now. Yeah, and then I'm hoping you will have a fresh batch of people shooting more soon.
Here's my pitch for you for mm-hmm. a guest.
Yeah.
Stephen Totillo, editor-in-chief of Kotaku.com, one day took time out of his busy day doing editor-in-chief stuff to tell me about the real Roxanne, who is a classic female rapper, one of the first female rapper who has this whole saga of her winning rap battles against sexist men. It's incredibly cool.
I would love to talk to Steven about that. I want to talk to Jason.
Oh, my God. Please talk to Jason.
I want Jason to teach me something amazing. Cecilia will probably teach me something. She said gross about anime. Yeah. I'm very excited about that. She's like, I'm going to find the grossest thing. I'm like, oh,
there's a lot of gross things about
anime. I'm
both
excited and scared.
We should have Chris Person on as well.
Yes. I think, yeah, everyone, Heather, like, I feel like everyone has, like, something.
Well, as you said, like, we all are really obsessed with hyper-specific things, mm-hmm. which is part of why I think mm-hmm. Kotaku is such an interesting site with, like, a lot of different sort of avenues. And I think why our work is all so good. Like, we are sometimes really obnoxious about the things that we really, really love. Mm-hmm. And I'm really glad that you've sort of created this avenue for us to, like, unload all these other things that we all always care about.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Completely. So Tim Rogers can get on and just be like,
hey, guys, it's Tim here. And
for a long time, my Tim impression
you ever,
was...
seen the Monty Hall show? Hey, guys, I think I'm going blind.
The first thing he says, and, like, that's it. We shot all of these in one take. Mm-hmm. And the first thing he says is, like, I'm like, and, like, here's the show. And, like, here's Tim Rogers to talk to us about the show. And Tim's just like, this show's called Too Long, Didn't Read. Oh, it's didn't know the name. It's kind of a bad thing to promote. And I'm like... What are you doing? Like, you knew the name of that. Like, I invited you, like, to do this and, like, broke it down what we were going to do, what it was called. And, like, he was just like, Yeah, he is timeless. He is iconic. He is iconic. A treasure.
Love him.
Yeah.
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called Pi: People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know ya at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends. So for me, it's, you know.
Trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to. Podcasts on?
Yeah, podcast, homecast.
Your podcasting apparatus? Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
Honestly, okay, so Jason Schreier, it sits next to me, and low-key, he's like a hard journalism guy, but he's a very wry sense of humor.
He has a very dry, like, subtle sense of humor.
Oh, my God.
I'm not sure if you saw if you listened to the excerpt, actually, we cut and posted for Split Screen this week. The other podcast Kirk had to stop the show in editing, and, like, because Jason said something, like, kind of almost under his breath, and Kirk kept talking, that Jason said something so funny about the Destiny games that Kirk had to, like, bring it back in editing and, like, focus on it, because it was a very funny, joke that, like, almost went under the radar.
So yesterday during the Game Awards, which we might have to take a slight detour to talk about the fucking Game Awards, because that was so weird. Jason tweeted something about Joseph Fares, who was that dev on A Way Out, who was probably a little bit intoxicated and went on this, like, very passionate rant about how much he loves games and how much he hates the Oscars, I guess. And Jason tweeted out something that was true, which was in a leaked marketing pamphlet about A Way Out, Joseph Fares was described as great for press opportunities. His passion is fantastic, but watch out for controversy. And Mia Khalifa, porn star, quote retweeted that and said, "I think that people also describe me that way." So in our Slack, I was like, "Jason, does she follow you? Like, please say yes." And he said, "Oh yeah, we DM all the time." Jason, you're a good guy. But yeah, I mean, I'm really glad that we are able to bring, like, our own unique personalities, like, into more at the forefront here.
Yes, yeah. I'm happy to facilitate.
Thank you.
That because. Y'all are very,
we're a
very
bunch.
Entertaining bunch.
We are a bunch.
But yeah, no, I'm excited to do more stuff in the future.
Yeah. You will?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm going to do more. It's going to, trust me. I feel like Tim Rogers should have a nightly show.
Yeah. I feel
maybe
like
one day.
I feel like a weekly Tim News Roundup would be very fun. Mm-hmm. He's wanted to do something like that. Mm. And I think that he should.
We'll see.
We shall see. So the other thing I want to talk to you about, Alex, is you are always showing me the fucking funniest GIFs and videos that come out of a very specific subset of Twitter.com.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Gamer Twitter.
Yeah.
Right? Yes.
GAYMER Twitter.
Which is where gay Twitter and video game Twitter lives, yeah. Where they meet together.
So, like, I'm part of, like, queer bisexual woman video game Twitter. And that is, like, its own particular beast of jokes and mostly anime nonsense.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, you are in a completely different intersection of identities.
I feel like, yeah, I what I'm kind of fascinated. Okay, so I guess I need to maybe plug someone here.
Okay.
Just Adam Musa. He is he works at, I believe he works at Vox. Mm-hmm. He tweets so many really funny things, especially with Super Mario Odyssey, like when Odyssey came out, that were so so like funny and specific references. He made an Instagram that's like makes fun of like an like it, for those who aren't in the know, an instigay is someone who, by all accounts, like they, I don't know, I feel like many instigays probably like make a lot of money, like a good amount of money off of their Instagram and off of like plugging things on their Instagram. It's someone with a ton. It's a gay man with a lot of followers on mm-hmm. Instagram, usually someone very physically buff.
Yeah.
There's a specific, I mean, like, I think I don't want to like kind of color a whole swath of people, but like, sorry, let me go back.
Okay.
it's a, like a specific like kind of group of people who I think might make their living off of Instagram, or at least like they have a ton of followers. And usually like I don't want to kind of pin all of them with this kind of description, but I would say a lot of them do things like they will post like a shirtless photo of themselves, and then like the caption will either be like something like, you know, like, you know, seize the day, you know, or alternatively, it's something like, you know, like about like a recent hurricane, like ravaging a city and like what people can do. But it's like a shirtless photo.
Of them. I've seen some that phenomenon exists also on straight person.
Of course.
Instagram. There's that thing where fake woke guys will post a shirtless selfie like with, I'm just reading the new Jim Crow.
Right? Yes. Okay. So we're on the same page.
Yeah.
But he made a fake Instagram that's like an instigay, but it's all photos of
is it shirtless Mario?
Yes. It's all Mario. And it's all like Mario like doing different things like in the game, and then the caption is like all like kind of like instigay like fodder.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe he also, I'm not sure if it was him, but I think he also had a Twitter account that was like all recreating scenes from movies using screen grabs from Odyssey.
That's amazing.
So like he's great. Mm-hmm. And go follow him. But there's like plenty of people who like post like that.
The one thing I was thinking of was that video of one of the Street Fighter characters where she just has this incredible walk.
We need to talk about Manette.
Yeah, yes. Manette. Oh my God.
I forget that user's name. I forget that that guy on Twitter. But yes, he posted a video where he's like playing and he's like, we need to talk about Manette. And then like he's just making her walk across the screen. He's just going like, oh Jesus, look at her. And she's just
she has this like over exaggerated like if a drag queen walks like that, it would be like, tone it down, honey. But it's like
she has a ballroom walk.
She has
a ballroom walk. And it's like and also like when she's idle, she'll like crouch,
yeah,
like in a pose.
Yeah. She's always voguing. It's incredible.
And when she does, he's in the middle of talking about something else, and then she crouches and he's like, oh yes, take a seat, take a load off. Like he's just, and since someone took him talking about her, oh well, because also he puts on like a house beat and mm-hmm. like makes her walk, and he's like,
it's really incredible.
He's like rapping over it. It's amazing. But someone then took that and made it into like a 3-minute song.
What?
Yes.
Holy
that
shit.
Like is like on SoundCloud. Someone just edited it into a song. It's amazing. But there's a lot of like that kind of stuff that I notice that I feel like queer people do connect so much to, you know, I guess like not only video games, but like lots of specific facets of culture, and like see themselves in them and kind of want to almost remix that, right?
Yeah.
Like kind of like take that
like claim it. So like mm-hmm. one really strong example of this, I think, is the video game Bayonetta, where that is a character that was pretty much designed because Hideki Kamiya really wanted a game starring a librarian-esque woman that was really tall and had glasses. Mm-hmm. Like, that's, like, his kink. However, in the game, she is, like, 7 feet tall and, like, so absurdly sexual that it becomes very funny. And she just, it seems, it's like very gay. And it's gay gamers really, really latched on to this. Very in command of her own sexuality, but also just like absurd. There's this scene in Bayonetta 2 where she's a witch. Also, she's a witch. She has guns in her heels and she shoots out of her heels. You see?
Why would she not?
Why would she not? Why would she not have her hair? Her clothes are made out of her hair, and that's also her weapon. So in order to fight people, she sometimes gets nude, you know. Just, she's cool. She's a cool lady. There's a scene in, like, the beginning of Bayonetta 2, where she's fighting an enemy, like, a horde of angels, and she summons a horse, and she rides the horse, and there's the camera pans to her butt up and down on the horse, and then pans down to the horse's butt, which is also moving up and down. And it's just one of those things where it's, like, video games especially lean into camp and kish so much, a lot of the time without meaning to, sometimes definitely meaning to. But either way, it's something that queer people see and identify with and then really voraciously want to show their support and make it their own in some way.
I've thought about that before I do, though. He's at Black Yoshi SSB.
Oh my God.
That's the Men At video. It's like his pinned tweet, so you should go watch it.
I'm going to watch it like all weekend.
It's amazing. In terms of camp in video games, I think that's something people definitely do read into. I think there's something to the fact of like, there's a story and like an environment and aesthetic in video games, but like you are very much a part of that. And so, I think a lot of camp comes from like failure. It's like it's like when something's trying to be something and it like fails being that, but then like it becomes something else in that failure. And video games, there's so much opportunity for that.
Yeah,
because you can make yourself fail so many times. Like highlight reel is camp. Like in many ways, it's that's something why that humor and like is. Something I'm just so
sort of integral to
drawn
the culture.
To. Yes. Yeah. And also like older video, like referencing older video games where like for the time, like it made sense. Like if you ever like go back and like play like an older game and it's like, oh, at the time, like this probably, I probably just accepted this because that was like the limitations of like the technology then. Like, like weird, maybe stilted dialogue or like weird like animations. Like you just accepted that. But now, where we are now, looking back at it, you're like, oh, this is strange and odd and doesn't make sense. Yeah. And like, therefore is funny or entertaining or engaging.
Like a lot of old Maddie Myers, who's at Compete, should probably have a better perspective on this. But there's a lot of old like Resident Evil dialogue that is super fucking weird.
That comes to, like right away. Like when Claire walks into the gun shop in Resident Evil 2 and the guy's like, almost fires at her, but it's like also like it's something you would see in a horror movie, like someone like lift up a gun and be like, oh, you're human, but like it's like he's like staring at her too long. It's like there's something, the timing's off on it, like from the viewpoint we're looking at it now.
Just the line, you were almost a Jill sandwich.
Oh gosh, was that Barry? That was Barry.
I think it was
Barry's
Barry.
A camp queen. Barry's a bear.
True. Absolutely true. I mean, I think also Super Mario Odyssey has been something that I've seen really. I think it's because you can let Mario play and you can let him run around the beach in his boxers. Like, I feel like there's something that's really latched on. And then Peach is also just like so incredibly fabulous.
Queen.
She queen. Looks amazing. And then Pauline also.
Pauline is also, yes. The like three quick things about this.
Okay.
One, yes, because I think there's something to the fact that like you're being able to change Mario's outfits, being able to kind of take him out of the context that we've known him in for so long. There's something inherently kind of entertaining and funny about that.
Yeah.
Peach specifically is also like. People were going crazy over whatever after the post game, when the game, when you get to like the first end of the game, which there's several, you know, And you see her in like the different, she shows up later in the different worlds, yeah. In different
she has
costumes.
Cute little outfits, yeah.
Yes. And the outfits like correspond to the different worlds. Like, there was something also like, just so I was driven to find her in every single one, yeah. After that. I mean, like, you kind of have to, but like, I was, cause I wanted to see the next look. So yeah. I was like, oh, this lookbook is going to be,
it's going to be incredible.
Amazing.
Yeah.
And Pauline.
Oh my God, Pauline.
I have one weird, I mean, I guess it's just like, you're just supposed to accept, which someone referenced this yesterday, I read. They referenced it somewhere. They were talking about TV characters, though. But the trope of carding with Bowser, is that what the trope's called? Or
I don't.
Yeah, I think it's like,
okay.
Carding with Bowser or something. It's like the trope of like when people are, when there's a hero and a villain, but mm-hmm. then like there's like a circumstance that like they are roommates or they yeah. need to do something weird together. And yeah. it's like they use Bowser as the example because it's like, you know, at this point in like the game's canon, like we just kind of accept that like kidnapping Peach is just something he does sometimes. And like he's not exactly like evil for doing it. He just kind of does it. And yeah. like Mario just kind of has to deal with it.
Yeah.
There was something funny with the fact that like towards the end of the game when you have to like because he's trying to marry Peach, right? And
yeah.
like he's like gathering all these items to marry Peach from the different worlds, and you kind of have to when you go to combat him at the end, all the different characters from all the different worlds are at the wedding chapel, including Pauline. And I'm just like, why are they supporting this? Like, it's like, why? Like, you walk in and Pauline's like, you just made it in time. I'm like, yeah, you could have helped her, Pauline. Like, why are you like
the mayor of New Donk City just lying, just waiting?
The mayor of one of the most biggest, powerful, like, metropolitan worlds. Ugh. And you can't do anything to help Peach out.
Come on, Pauline.
But you know, it's fine. She had enough to deal with. She had to turn the power back on in her city.
She's also has a jazz band, you know.
She's a performer. She's an artist. She didn't want to get involved in politics.
God, as soon as Pauline showed up.
Which is funny because she's a mayor.
I know, right?
But yeah, I mean, I was happy to see her go from... I loved that reference.
Yeah.
Like,
I wasn't expecting to see, like, a modern Pauline.
Yes.
Like, in any game.
In a pantsuit.
In a pantsuit. With that
and
hat,
and yes, with that hat. And, you know, she's just kind of like, yeah, I'm like, you know, I love, like, this idea of, like, she's kind of like an ex. And
yeah.
She's just kind of there. And she's like, yeah, remember when you used to save me from Donkey Kong? And
well, I mean, I guess you're still doing that. So I'm Mayor Mario. I'm doing great. Want to listen to my jazz band?
Good for her.
Honestly,
I was just confused why she's at this forced wedding, which I was like,
yeah,
whatever.
Why though. Would she go?
But that's the thing. It's like no one takes about. It's like, okay, yeah, he's trying
to
do this.
Also, I think Peach is like, we talked about this in the last episode. Peach is the only character that wouldn't marry Bowser. Bowser's like,
which is probably why he, you know,
yeah.
he's into her.
Yeah, of course.
But like, to me, a lot of things about right now we're getting into like to like Super Mario canon, and
yeah,
like that's
yeah.
like a very tricky place for me because it's like a lot of things don't mean. Okay, what's happened? People are going to be like, I don't know, like adding me on Twitter and being like, well, actually, like, and explaining this. But it's still kind of confusing to me. So there's a kingdom, a mushroom kingdom mm-hmm. of toads, of
yes.
people who are mushrooms, who have mushroom heads. Those are not hats.
They're heads.
That is his head.
That is
their head.
100%.
And I don't care what some old... Like not even like is that animated show canon that people like point
yeah,
to?
Yeah,
I don't even know. It might be. If it is, you can correct me. But the whole idea that like there's a mushroom kingdom full of mushroom people, but then they have a human ruler.
Yeah, but also you see Mario and Peach in conjunction with the New Donk City people. Are those people or is Mario a person?
Tim Rogers had a video about this.
Oh my God.
Is Mario a person?
Tim Rogers doesn't
Yeah, vape. He's not a plumber anymore, but he's a person.
That's true.
But it's like strange to me. It's like a human sovereign of a kingdom of peaceful mushrooms, mushroom humans. And then every time she's in trouble, she calls in two plumber missionaries to handle the situation. I don't know. And then it's like, really, like, people, like, will be like, oh, well, like, did you watch, like, this animated, like, show that, like, establishes it? I'm like, okay, if we're going to that, we need to then talk about the live-action movie.
Exactly. I feel like for most games, what is in the games is the text and then other extraneous material.
Yeah. Mm.
You know, put it in the games. You gotta it's sort of like when Dumbledore's gay, you know? It's meta-textual, it's subtextual in the Harry Potter books that Dumbledore and Grindelwald had a romance. But if Dumbledore is not actively gay in the book, if he doesn't explicitly say, when I was young, I fell for Grindelwald, and that's, you know, it was shitty, it was a shitty time, then, like, it doesn't actually count if, like, J.K. Rowling says it afterward. I'm sure that's what she intended, but you can read those books not knowing Dumbledore is gay. No. Anyway, that's mine. The whole thing.
But, you know, you want to talk about camp.
Yeah.
We should talk about the live action.
Oh, God.
Mario Bros. Movie. It's just there's something so, it's kind of like in the same space as, not Batman. Is it Batman and Robin? It's not Batman. Batman Forever is the third film. Batman and Robin's the fourth film.
Yes.
In that, like, those were movies I watched as a kid, and, like, it's an amazing experience to watch them as a kid, being like, yeah, fun.
Yeah.
And then watch them as an adult and also be like, yeah, fun, but then be like, oh, this is horrible.
Yeah.
But also so beautiful and how horrible it is.
Yeah.
There's something just so I just rewatched the Mario Bros. Movie recently.
Really?
Yes, because it there was something where I was like, I had to, one, because Peach isn't in it.
Yeah.
It's Daisy.
Oh.
Yes, it's Princess Daisy. It's not Peach.
Huh.
Daisy's the character. And also the Goombas are, like, they're, like, weird. What is it? They're, like, dinosaur people. Do you remember this? It's very bizarre.
I think so. And I mean, that movie's kind of like
Fiona Shaw is in it.
Fiona Shaw is in it?
Fiona Shaw is in it.
What the fuck?
She, yes. She, she's, like, I don't know, like, Bowser's, like, or no, it's not Bowser. It's King Koopa. It's different, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Is it not? That is different.
Yes. Yes? I think so.
I'm sure someone will tell
me. Someone will know. Please don't email us. But do email us. But don't.
This is very – I would love to host, like, a showing of that film and then have, like, a panel discussion afterwards.
Yeah, absolutely.
Just because it's so – to me, it's so kooky crazy. And but my favorite thing is that the – who is the fish? The fish in the Mario games.
Oh, shit. Who's that fish? Who's that fish? I'm going to ask Dr. Google.
Like, yeah, the fish in the Mario games is like in the film version, she is like a beautiful, like, she has like a red leather jacket on.
What?
She's like, yeah, it's like, and I didn't realize that character's supposed to be the same as the fish. I don't know.
There would be no indication that they are the same character at all.
Sorry, I feel like I told you what it would happen if we started going into, like,
Super Mario lore.
Super Mario canon. But yeah, we can write the ship.
Cheep Cheeps.
Yeah, I believe that
this is a picture of Cheep Cheep I'm looking at right now.
Yes.
And it's a fish. It's like a straight up a fish.
Yes, Cheep Cheep, but in the live action movie is I don't remember the actress's name. Super Mario live action. Cheep, is she?
This character does not need to be a human being. Like, number one, that's bizarre. It's confusing that they would turn the fish into a human.
Oh, Big Bertha.
Big Bertha's a Cheep Cheep?
Big Bertha, she is named after, yes, the fish. So she is the bouncer in the Super Mario Bros. Movie.
That's so weird.
And
I understand entirely why Nintendo was so angry about this movie.
They must have been furious. It's just so bizarre.
Yeah.
Yoshi's like a bad, like a leftover from Jurassic Park.
Oh,
like
my God.
It's like a weird, like, puppet dinosaur.
Oh, God.
Sorry. We went into like a whole different world. It's so, okay. What else is on your mind, Gita?
The only other thing, I also wanted to talk about the Game Awards, which I did watch.
Yes.
Because I love award ceremonies specifically because they are the silliest thing in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And this was the silliest of the silliest things in the world.
Mm-hmm.
You actually had a human life last night when the Game Awards came
out. I did not watch it because I had previous plans.
Yeah.
But I did hear a bit about it today.
It used to be more intensely dumb. Stephen was saying this morning that 5 years ago it ended with a giant penis on stage. It was a penis joke. Jack Black was there.
That's fascinating.
It was on the Esquire channel.
You're right.
The Man channel.
Mm-hmm.
And it was very alienating, I would say, as someone who did like video games 5 years ago. I found it really alienating. Now it's trying to class itself up. Like, they had Phoenix, that French rock band, play. Last year they had, you know, Deadmau5, and they had musical guests. And they had this really touching tribute to Carol Shaw, who was a programmer that is, like, sort of legendary. I look back, worked at Activision for a very long time, and Atari. But it's also like a deeply weird ceremony. Like at one point they were doing some kind of announcement for the Zelda DLC. And so they had Aonuma come out on stage, but before they did, they had this thing where they projected an image of the castle at the end of Zelda Breath of the Wild, that you go in to defeat Ganon. And they play all the voice clips of the guardians, like what they say to you when you go to defeat Ganon. And they just like shine a blue spotlight on that projection. And I was watching this and I was like, I like thought I had dropped acid or something. You know, it was just like a deeply, deeply strange thing to do at like a very classy award show.
Mm-hmm.
And they had like, I didn't think like the Joseph Fares incident was actually all that weird. That kind of stuff happens all the time in multiple industries of people, firebrands getting too riled up. I remember the thing with Rage Against the Machine climbing the stage at the VMAs that one time. Or last year at the Oscars, they fucking just read the wrong card.
That was, you know who that was? That was,
Hoops, tell me.
The Oscars last year? The Oscars last year was the beautiful work of Miss Faye Dunaway. In that Warren Beatty opened up that envelope and was like, this isn't right. And you could tell he was like really confused. And she was just like, I'm not doing this tonight. She just like looked at him and was like, La La Land, walked away.
Oh my God.
And then what hell she wrought. Like on that award show.
Beautiful.
And then like was just kind of like, I'm Faye Dunaway. Like I don't care.
Me too.
Like
I do this.
Does it look like I care? Because I don't. No. And I was yes.
That was the first year I skipped the Oscars in many, many years. Usually what I do is I get like, lots of people have classy Oscars parties where people dress up and drink wine. I usually get like Domino's and a 40. And get very, very drunk and scream at the television. It's like my sports, basically. I also like watching sports, but this is like...
So is that what you did last night as well?
Yeah, I had one beer because I had to come into work today.
Yes.
So I only had one beer, but I did get on Skype with two of my friends, and we did also yell at the television.
Mm-hmm.
But it's... The Game Awards desperately wants to be the Oscars, but it's also... I mean, the thing about video games I like is that they're not Hollywood. They're a little bit stupider. And even when they're deeply profound, I feel like I don't need them to come with the sort of ceremony that the Oscars come with.
Right. I guess, to me, it's a hard thing to, like... the Academy Awards and many other award shows have, like, I guess, a very, like, we were talking about this yesterday. They have, like, a very, like, kind of, they have a very kind of, like, structured kind of body who, like, votes on these things. And also, like, they have, like, it's been something that's been honed for over how many years? Like, you know, what Oscars are we on? The 70-something?
70-something. I feel like 77.
So, you know, like, to me, it's like, I'm sure the Video Game Awards could possibly be in the future something a little bit more. But, like, to me, a little bit more in line with, like, what other award shows that have existed for far longer. Because at the end of the day, it's like, it's just congratulating achievement of art. And, you know, but I do think that the other place where you run into trouble is that, like, there's plenty of independent films that are made, like, outside of major studios. But typically for an independent film to kind of get into the same sphere as other films, you know, like, they come up through certain channels. And I think in video games, those channels are a little bit more varied, right? There's not like hyper specific, I feel like,
you will see large studios
for awards.
It's structured in a similar way as Hollywood production houses are sometimes, where they have a major production house and then smaller labels, you know, that will fund indie films. You do see that, you know, Super Giant, who did this Pyre this year, they are under the WB Games label.
But I feel like there's so much more, like, opportunity to, like, make things independently and then also have, like,
Feels like cinema in the 70s, right? Where suddenly every asshole that went to film school was making a movie. Or sort of the advent in the early 90s of video, of being able to pick up a camcorder and just make a movie and go to Sundance with it. Mm. That's sort of, like, what independent games feel like to me.
Yeah, I feel like it's just that there's – it's a great thing because I think there's more of, like, a kind of swath of different things people can create and also promote and have other people consume. But it makes, like, having an award show, I think, more difficult to
Like, even amongst the games that are very mainstream and very popular that were nominated for Game of the Year last night, it's difficult. Zelda ended up winning. It's a fantastic fucking game. So good. But in the Oscars, you're comparing just long-form narrative cinema to long-form narrative cinema. And there are many different genres, but they all fit very similar structure and formats. Right. Super Mario Odyssey is a very different game from Persona 5, which is a very different game from, I don't know, Hellblade. I don't know if that was up for Game of the Year, but that is, they're all just formally very different. And I find it difficult to compare those kinds of things.
Right. Which then you get into that with film as well.
Yeah, you do.
Because you get into the fact that, like, you know, horror films, even though they can be, like, immaculately made, it's rarer for them to get, like, big award recognition.
Yeah.
Same with, like, broad comedies. Like, but I think that it's almost like kind of like a video game awards kind of straddles like this line of like technical artistic achievement in terms of like a specific medium, but also has like such a bigger range that it almost straddles the, I feel like it straddles like the line between like more like technical artistic award shows like the Grammys, the Oscars, etc. And also, like, you know, on the other side of that is, like, anything that's, like, internet awards, you know what I mean? Like, like Webbies and stuff.
Those
like
the Webbies,
Like, yes, you can, like, give awards. Like, I don't think you can't, but I think it's, like, almost, like, it's harder to, like, give an award to something that's, like, such a large and varied pool.
You know, I kind of wish that the Video Game Awards were a little bit more like the VMAs, which are always a mess, but are always really fun to watch. Like, last night's ceremony felt like a 2-hour slog with a lot of commercials and a lot of announcements, but I didn't feel like the awards had much of weight to them. It was nice to see people honored for their work, especially people who made really excellent games. But the VMAs, like, the point of the VMAs is that they're crazy.
The point of the VMAs is that it's more of an entertainment show. Yeah. I feel like that. I mean, like, there are people do, like, be like, I got a VMA. But, like, I feel like the kind of, besides award giving, the central, I feel like, thrust of the show is to give a show to entertain people.
You watch the VMAs because of performances, and also people might get rowdy. You know, like, you watch it because something might happen.
Right. I think, yeah. I mean, like, I am not sure. I didn't. I missed last night. So. But
something did happen last night. You saw the Joseph Farris clip that sung. Yes. That was unexpected. And, like, that was really cool to me. Because it, to me, that is the most video gamesy kind of thing, is someone who is so passionate and maybe a little bit embarrassing, but also very proud of what they've done.
Yeah, that's the thing. I think I think there should be an opportunity for people to be, like, celebrated for, like, hard artistic work. Yeah. And I think a lot of that, so much of, like, games are just so... it's like such a specific, interesting experience that people create for other people that I think they should definitely be.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I
recognize and award it. It's like, it's more of like figuring out the exact formula of how you do that is more of a, I feel like it's a challenge.
It is a challenge. And I mean, as much as everyone sort of rags on the Game Awards, you know, it's not a bad thing that it exists. So I just wish it was shorter and better.
No, I think, like, people will have, like, criticism. People will have, even if, quote unquote, like, it's like it hones itself and fights to itself over time. People will always have an issue with an award show.
I mean,
people
I'm always rip shitting mad at the Oscars, and I fucking watch it every year.
I mean, like, last year, like, I got up from the when they say La La Land for Best Picture, I got up. I was at a party. I got up from the couch and was like, "Have a great night." Was putting on my jacket.
Oh my
god! And then when they were like, and saying goodbye to people, and then they were like, "Just kidding, Moonlight won," I was like, "Oh, okay." And, like, took off my jacket. I was like, I'll hang out for a bit longer.
I, like, legitimately every time, like, a bad thing, like a award that is awarded to someone I don't give a shit about, like, and or I actively dislike, I always immediately go, "Well, they fucking gave Crash Best Picture, so I don't know what I expected," and I just turn into that asshole. Like, it's bad. It's like a bad scene. I, like, don't want to care, but I do. It's something about the ceremony of awarding people for something that is emotionally moving. I get so attached and so invested in it. Mm-hmm. The Disaster Artist is going to be nominated for awards this year.
I mean, I enjoy The Disaster Artist so much. Is there? There's a Room video game.
There is.
I was reading about it. I would love
it's a fan-made video game.
To check out what that situation is. But
we should get a stream in. If they're nominated, we should try to get a stream in of the Room video game. That would be really fun.
Because the Room is just so, I mean, you want to talk about a movie about the magic of making movies and also, like, the challenges of making movies. Like, I mean, like, that's what people, like, people are like, La La Land's like a love letter to Hollywood. I'm like, yeah, okay, fine. But The Disaster Artist is a love letter to making films, because it's about a person who is basically indescribable, like, not of this world.
Yeah.
Someone described The Room as, like, what if you met an alien and you explained, you never showed an alien what a movie was, but you explained to an alien what a movie was and then told the alien to make a movie. I forget who said that, but
I think it actually was Tom Bissell, who was a video game journalist and also wrote for Gears of War.
It is a, like, that is so true about The Room. There's just something so, because you could tell it's made by someone who, like, Tommy Wiseau loves films.
Yes.
Loves films.
Like, it, what makes The Disaster Artist and The Room so affecting and, like, is because you see how badly he wants this to work, but nothing is working.
Right.
He loves movies so much, he's willing to make something deeply embarrassing and bad without any shame at all.
right?
He has no idea. I think he still doesn't really understand why people are so in love with the room.
There's something about it in that it's so bad, but it's so pure.
Yeah.
And I remember when I saw the room for the first time in a theater full of people, I was like a freshman or sophomore in college. Mm-hmm. I got like recruited to do promotion for the Troll 2 documentary room screening. I got to like go for free.
Amazing.
And he like introduced, you know, like, hey, this is my movie. Like, you know, and before the movie started, and then watched it. And when it gets to, I mean, the iconic people like reference this line that you're tearing me apart, Lisa, all the time.
Yeah.
Even though that is not my favorite line, I definitely have breast cancer. Yeah. is wild, but yeah. I mean, also to me, my other favorite is like, everyone betray me. I'm fed up with this world.
Yes.
Amazing. But that you're tearing me apart, Lisa. The first time I saw it, I was like, it just so quickly clicked in my head that I was like, oh, he really loves Rebel Without a Cause.
Yes.
He loves Rebel Without a Cause so much. And he was like, I liked what James Dean did there.
Yeah.
And that's like what the Disaster Artist gets into. Yeah. Like that this person was – that Tommy like watched these things and was like, yeah, I want to emulate that and be that. But like he doesn't
– Well, when you ask him who his influences are, he says all these classic directors like Hitchcock.
Right? Yeah.
You know, Hitchcock is the first thing he says always. And I think he thinks he wants to. You can see so many attempts to create that kind of suspense
and
paranoia, mm-hmm, but it just doesn't work.
That's what's amazing. It's like just so, you know, he wants to like embody. That's the thing. It's not like a bad movie made by someone who like didn't do their homework. Like he's someone who's like watched a lot of film and wants to make that, but like something is lost in the middle.
Yeah.
And he and it left me wondering, I'm not sure if anything comes to mind for you immediately. I'm not quite sure. Like if there's any, there has to be, I'm sure there are, and I'm sure I'm aware that there's games like this where someone who made a video game because they love it so much and they like wanted to create it, but it's just not.
So before you got here, we had an intern, Chloe Spencer,
mm-hmm,
and she interviewed this guy who was making games for the Wii, and they were like
here.
You were here for that?
Yeah.
Yes, that guy.
Like loved developing games, and he like did it in his spare time.
His spare time.
The games were like, what was it, like a circus? It was like
a weird fucked up circus.
And
thing.
He was like, oh, I made this for kids, but it's like the darkest, weirdest like world.
It's bizarre. You have no idea if you're doing the right thing ever. And it's really ugly. It's really aggressively ugly to look at. And yeah, I mean, I think if you.
But he was just like, I like doing this. Yeah. I love doing that. Like, he's like, I like making games.
Yeah, and like, so pure.
And yes, there's something in that experience. Like that is like camp. That is like this pure experience that like something's failing at what it's supposed to be, and it's like something else entirely. And I remember that because I remember being like, this is amazing.
Yeah.
But I couldn't remember it like off the top of my head. And I'm sure there are several games like that are just like
Definitely. I know that is something that I really cherish in games is those moments of. I mean, something I really like about Hideo Kojima is that he really wants to be a Hollywood director, and you can really tell, but he's also just, like, too fucking weird. Like, the 8-minute trailer for Death Stranding, which is a game that will literally never come out, was premiered last night, and at one point, so the air makes people get old and die, and there's a giant invisible ape or man that is killing people also, and then Norman Reedus swallows a baby, and we get a camera going down his throat to see that the baby's still alive inside of him.
The baby became instantly Eric Van Allen.
Yep.
Like, did you see what he made?
I know he made something. I didn't see what it was though.
It's the clip that like it goes down his throat, like his throat, and then it turns into the opening from Fraggle Rock.
Oh my god. Eric Van Allen, you're amazing.
An old boyfriend of mine, when I was upset, this is so bizarre. I don't know why I'm sharing this right now. He used to sing Fraggle Rock to me in German to cheer me up because it sounds like a funny, like fun little theme in English. And then when you sing it in German, it's just like, I don't know, something about it becomes that much more like engaging and like fun and bouncy. But I was immediately like, I'm always comforted. So like I was watching and like expecting to see something like weird because of the baby, like for something weird or gross, something like gross internet-y. Then when it turned into Fraggle Rock, I was like, oh, I was like touched.
But like just imagine like half the ideas that Kojima has being in an actual movie, you know, like I just there's something there. It's out of pure love, and you can see it in the way that he like talks to and talks about Guillermo del Toro, Norman Reedus, and Mads Mikkelsen, that he just genuinely wants to tell epic, sweeping stories that are as affecting as Hollywood movies.
Right.
It's just that he is sometimes a huge fucking dumbass. And, like, deeply, deeply, deeply weird.
Yeah. By the way, did you see The Shape of Water?
I haven't seen it yet, but I really want to see the fish fuck movie. God.
Yes. I like The Creature from the Black Lagoon Who Fucks.
Yes. My it's, everything.
It is. I very much enjoyed it. Right. It's, yes. I mean, like, I love Del Toro. I love, I mean, it's kind of reminds me of like his earlier like Devil's Backbone. Oh, yeah.
His Spanish stuff.
Kind of worlds. It's like I think his most like emotional story. And I was also obsessed with it because it's about two romantic leads who one is human, one is a fish person. And they're both mute. Neither of them speak. Sally Hawkins signs the entire film.
Oh, cool.
But the beautiful thing is they're advocates, like the people who speak for them, like in various scenes, help them, is a closeted gay man and a woman of color.
That's awesome.
So it's like, it's a beautiful, like, it was so surprising to go see this movie that you're like thinking like, oh, this is like a, you know, weird Guillermo del Toro, like kind of, maybe romantic fantasy, you know, monster movie classic thing. And then to hear all the questions at the Q&As, half of them were, which at a Q&A is sometimes when someone's like, this isn't a question, but I get a little bit like.
Yeah, you get a little nervous.
But they were all like people who were like, thank you so much for making this movie. Like, aww. I kind of saw like the first person was a trans woman who was like the whole like kind of point you were making this movie really touched me. The last woman who talked was like, it was so nice to see like a black woman on screen who, you know, Octavia Spencer was at the screening I saw, and she talked about how what did she say that was funny? She said like, you know, during this period, I played a maid in The Help. I played a woman who works at NASA, a mathematician and hidden figures. And she's like, and now I played a maid who works at NASA, basically, because she works at like this secret government facility. But that like her character was like of its time, of the time, like, and like face like contextual in the story, like racism, but like very much had her own, like that wasn't her, like her like only like thing.
Yeah.
Like she had like very much this like specific place in the story and her own agency in the story.
Yeah.
And like made her own decisions and while still like working in like the social construct of the time. And I don't know. It's just it was a beautiful film. I think you would very much enjoy it, Gita. So I'm excited for you to see it.
On that note,
yes,
I think I'm going to wrap things
up.
Oh,
yes. I'm just like babbling about
no,
The Shape of Water.
No, I really want to see The Shape of Water so badly.
Yes.
It looks amazing. And the fish has a nice butt. It was very important to Guillermo del Toro that the fish have a nice butt. He said that specifically.
He said he wanted Doug Jones to like embody like a matador.
Oh,
like
God.
This like masculine, like regal kind of presentation. And all I kept thinking about was Breath of the Wild.
With the fish man.
Mm-hmm.
With Sidon, the fish prince boyfriend.
Yes.
Oh my God.
That's what I kept thinking of. Someone actually, full circle, want to go back.
Yeah.
Someone posted on Twitter, like it was Link in the drag look he has.
Yes.
Where he's like where he has to pass into
the women only
yes,
city.
Yes. And in that look next to the prince.
Oh my God.
And they put like The Shape of Water 2017.
Oh my God. Incredible.
Yes.
That's so beautiful.
Full circle there.
Love it. All right. So I want to thank Executive Director of Audio, Mandana Mofidi, and also give a shout out to Levi Sharp, who is to help us get set up today.
Thank you. He's great.
I want to thank you for coming.
I want to thank you, Kiana. Thank you for having me today just to shoot the shit and
no problem. Chat. I love having you around me in my life. And we'll see more TLDR next week.
Yes. And then we'll be shooting more and then hopefully doing more fun stuff in the very near future.
You should all definitely follow Kotaku's Instagram, which is kotaku.com.
Kotaku.com. Yes,
yeah, correct. It's very good. And then I need to also thank Stuart Wood, who did our theme music, and Mellow Makes, who did the, I need to thank Mellow Makes, who did our theme music, and Stuart Wood, who did the sort of interstitial, like, commercial music. And thank you for listening. Please leave us reviews. We can, on iTunes or anywhere you can find us. You can find us on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, Spotify, pretty much anywhere where you can find a podcast. So thanks so much for listening.
Thank you.
Catch you next.
Bye.